their community-driven matching grants program. Maine Masons regularly work with local organizations and nonprofits to help them accomplish their goals, be it an extra set of hands using their time and talents, or perhaps some form of financial support. Find a Masonic lodge near you and learn more about MAC. Masons Assisting Communities at mainemcf.org. Then, ask a Mason and work together to help in your community.
Hey, we're back on Downtown Thursday afternoon. Rich Kimball here with him. And it's time for us to talk a little Red Sox. To do that, we welcome into the program our friend Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Hello there, Sean.
Rich, that bumper music sounds suspiciously like a teacher who's been let out for the summer.
Yes, indeed. You are wise, sir. You are very wise.
Well, it helps to be an Elton John fan and also to have two daughters who are teachers who are feeling the exact same way you are this week.
Yeah, freedom. Everybody notices the kids when the school year ends for them and they go running. You know, the teachers are like, we'll go out the back door so it's not as obvious, but we're running too.
I'm sure.
Well, I want to talk about the Red Sox, but first up, tell me more about your book that's coming up. I saw a mention of it in the Boston Globe. I understand it's part of a series?
Yes. It's called The Franchise, A Curated History of the Red Sox, and it's published by Triumph Books out of Chicago, and they have started a series. The one on the Yankees, written by Mark Feinstein, is already out. It's been out by a few weeks. Mine is out on July 12th, and it's basically, 25 or 30 essays on important people, happenings, games, series, trends, historical developments on the part of the Red Sox, and most of it is fairly modern. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel and try to squeeze 120 years of history into a few hundred pages. That is a Herculean task to which I am not prepared to tackle. So while there are chapters and certainly lots of focus on people that cannot be ignored in the team's history, people like Tom Yawkey and Ted Williams, most of it, the vast majority of it, is post-1967 forward. So I guess it should be a curated boomer's history of the Boston Red Sox. And I don't mean George Scott. I mean people of a certain age. It's out July 12th, and I'd be, as we get a little closer, I'd love to talk a little bit more about it with you next month.
Oh, you can bet on that. And being of that certain age, I'm very excited to read it.
Well, thanks. I had a lot of fun doing it. Most of the time when I wasn't worried that I had lost several chapters before my wife found them on my hard drive, and I barely escaped hopping out our second story window here in my office. So it was a labor of love, and most of it was positive.
Well, that's good. I can't wait to read it. Great news there from Sean. Let's talk about the Red Sox, man. Things can change pretty quickly here in a long baseball season. Not only are they back and right in the thick of it, but only a half game out of second place. Now, admittedly, that doesn't mean much when the Yankees are on pace to win about 118 games, but it's been an impressive turnaround.
Yeah, the Red Sox are going to need binoculars to keep pace with the Yankees because, if you're a Red Sox fan, I fear that they've made themselves uncatchable through their play for the first 3 months. They are playing at a 750-plus percentage. And, stranger things have happened, as I don't need to tell anybody who is a devotee of Red Sox history in a certain 1978 season, but it would seem that the Yankees have pretty much thrown away the lock and key for first place in the division. But, there are certainly wild card berths to be gained, and you only have to go back to last October to see a certain wild card team that got hot at the right time in October and came within two games of the pennant. So, yeah, but, you know, to go from when does the sell-off begin and, you know, what are we going to do to occupy ourselves in July and August while the Red Sox play out the string, they now, as you mentioned, are a half game out of second in the division. They're a half game by extension out of leading the wild card race for the entire league. And it's been a pretty dramatic turnaround over the last, say, 6 or 7 weeks. Everything has started to click for them. You know, the starting pitching has been good most of the year, but now the bullpen has gotten better, and certainly the offense kicked it in around mid-May and hasn't let up yet.
Well, we talked about him, I think, the last time you were on, but one of the great pickups of the offseason, got his sixth win last night. Michael Wacha has been terrific.
Yeah, and I'll plead guilty to scratching my head when the Red Sox announced Wacha had been signed over the winter. When you look at the numbers from a year ago, he finished with an ERA, I think, over 5. The Red Sox insisted that, you know, they liked what they saw with some changes he made with his pitch mix in September, kind of de-emphasized the cutter and started throwing his other pitches more and with more success. And, you know, sometimes you hear that and you roll your eyes about secondary and underlying numbers and advanced analytics. But in this case, it certainly looks like they knew what they were talking about. And he's been one of the bargain pickups, not just for them, but throughout the game. You know, you got a starter who's got a 2.33 ERA through nearly the end of June. Who knows where it goes from here, but certainly he's been a revelation through the first half.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. The bullpen has settled in pretty nicely as well, as people seem to have figured out their roles. But here we go again, as the team gets ready to head to Toronto in the coming days. Tanner Houck, the closer, won't be able to go again.
Yeah, this is I just finished writing a column for BSJ about this. Rich, and it seems that more than any team, the Red Sox have this issue of COVID vaccinations hanging over them like no other team in baseball. Part of that, I think, is because they play in the American League East, which requires them to go to Toronto 3 times. You know, if you play in the Central or West, you make 1 trip in. If you're an interleague opponent of the Blue Jays and you're playing them on the road, you make 1 trip in. Well, the Red Sox make 3 trips in. They've made 1. They already lost 3 out of 4 in their first visit to Toronto, and that was without Houck. This will be without Houck and Jaron Duran, who is also unvaccinated and thus ineligible. Kike Hernandez is not ready to come back yet. So, you know, that takes the Red Sox out of both a center fielder and a leadoff hitter in 2 different instances. And if we look forward, the second to last series of the year is going to involve the Red Sox playing in Toronto, which we can assume Duran and Houck will remain ineligible for, and also Chris Sale, unless something's changed there. We didn't get an opportunity to ask him if he had changed his vaccination status when he was up in Fenway about 2 weeks ago, but I'm going to guess if you haven't gotten it now, you're unlikely to change your mind on that. Your mind is made up, and so, you know, think of the possibility of seeding and home field advantage or some postseason implication there in the final week of the season. You're without your number one starter, your closer, and you know, if not your starting center fielder, then someone who could really help you steal a base and get on base. So, you know, the Red Sox can't get away from this, and it remains a mystery to me, Rich, why players are so averse to this. I'm getting a little tired about people, quote, doing their research.
Yeah.
A year and a half after the vaccination has been available to the average person in this country, where the vast majority of people have wisely gotten their vaccinations, including the vast majority of players in the big league. But the Red Sox are on an island, and we're going to see how costly that becomes for them between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, and apparently Durant has actually had COVID twice. You would think that might open your eyes a bit.
Yeah, I don't understand it. You know, whether it's political, whether it's just there are legitimate concerns about long-term implications, I have a hard time squaring it. I fully understand that people have the right to make their own decision and that neither baseball nor the government can mandate this kind of thing. But I just don't, you know, we're 2 years into this, and the fact that some people are digging their heels in still mystifies me. And as I said, they have the right to their opinion. I have mine, and I just gave it.
Yeah, they have the right to theirs, although I'll say they're wrong, but we'll move on.
I think they're wrong, too, and we have the right to say that, and they have their right to tell us we're wrong, but ultimately that gets us to a standstill.
Exactly. Well, speaking of Sale, what's the timeline now for his potential return?
Well, he's going to pitch again on Monday in the Florida Complex League, and that goes to two innings. And then, you know, I haven't done it, Rich. I suppose you could if you took a calendar and schedule out and started marking every fifth day until he gets up to about, you know, five innings and somewhere between 80 and 90 pitches. I would guess that gets you somewhere right around the All-Star break or into the second week of July that he would have built up his pitch count and arm strength sufficient to come back and at least give them five or six innings and 90 or so pitches. But I think we're looking at a minimum of probably four more starts, one more at the FCL in Florida, and then at least three between Portland and Worcester when he comes up here. I think the plan is for them to kind of handle it like they did a year ago when he was rehabbing from Tommy John surgery. And that means he's with the team at Fenway when they're home. He's throwing, side sessions and bullpens at Fenway and then driving to either Portland or Worcester to throw and then coming back. So, you know, we're still about 3 weeks out, I think, from his return, but on track.
You talked about the offense turning it around really last month, and one of the keys to that was Trevor Story beginning to hit again. You know, he's still been up and down a little bit, a big home run the other night. But what's been surprising to me, I think, is how well he has played defensively at a brand new position.
Yeah, he really has. Alex Cora has gone out of his way to say that he thinks Story is playing as well defensively as any second baseman in baseball, and that's pretty high praise for a guy who had not played so much as an inning there at the major league level. He did play a bit in the Rockies minor league system coming up, but not since he got to the big leagues with Colorado. And we heard what a good athlete this guy is, but I don't think you appreciate that until you get a chance to watch him every day. And I should add, he's unquestionably the best and maybe even fastest base runner on the Red Sox. He's 9 for 9 in stolen base attempts. He's smart about when he elects to go. But yeah, defensively, he's been able to transfer that shortstop range to the other side of the bag. We saw him make that tremendous leaping catch of a line drive the other night to take a hit away. He's shown himself with the ability to range over to the right, to the first base, right field side of second. Playing in the shift, he can turn the double play. You know, if there were any skeptics wondering how well he was going to be able to handle this position change on the fly, I think they've been convinced.
Well, Sean, we've got about 6 weeks to go until the trade deadline. What, if anything, are the Red Sox looking for, and what do they have for trade chips?
Well, I suppose, To tackle the latter part of it, Rich, they're probably better equipped in terms of trade chips than they ever have been, or at least in recent history, because the inventory of top prospects has grown quite a bit in the last few years since Heim Bloom took over as chief baseball officer. The minor league system has gotten much, much better and deeper. You know, there'll be guys who will require being put on the 40-man roster this winter to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. And, you know, the Red Sox may look at that list and say, well, we're only going to be able to add 5 or 6 guys to the 40-man after the year, and we've got, you know, 10 or 12 players who have to be protected. So there's a list of, you know, a half dozen players that you either trade to address a present need or end up risk losing for $50,000 in the December Rule 5 draft. So I think it's clear there's a handful of guys who are untouchable. Among them would be Tristan Casas, certainly. Nick York is probably in that. Brian Bayo, now at AAA. Marcelo Meyer, their first round pick from a year ago. You know, there's probably 2 or 3 others that are under no circumstances would they give them up. But as I said, I think they've never had more in terms of, you know, what they can offer other teams. In terms of what they'll be looking for, I would say their 3 primary needs are bullpen, and bullpen. Even with the prospect of having someone like Garrett Whitlock moved back into relief when Chris Sale, and then eventually certainly when James Paxton joins a month or so later, you know, you have Whitlock, you have Houck to close, you have Whitlock to provide multiple innings, you've got John Schreiber who's emerged, you're going to have 4 lefties when Josh Taylor comes back, and yet I think they could still use someone who has high leverage experience, preferably someone who's done it in the postseason, you know, kind of an Adam Ottavino type, for lack of a better parallel, a hard-throwing righty who has been there, who's been on the big stage, who can get outs in the 8th or 9th inning. I think that is unquestionably their number one need. you know, they may look for starting pitching depth, although it would seem they're pretty well spoken for in that area. They could look for someone that could help out at first base, given that Stahlbeck still hasn't gotten fully untracked, and Casas, I would have predicted, would be up with them in the second half. Now I'm not sure that's true. He's missed more than a month with this ankle injury. That's cost him valuable development time. So, you know, you can always upgrade the roster around the edges, but I would say that the vast majority of their energy would be spent exploring relief options.
Sean, we appreciate your insight as always. Thanks so much for making some time for us this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you in a few weeks as soon as the book is out and talk about that.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Rich.
Thank you. Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal, with us here on a Thursday downtown.